So this is the whole field of attention, you see. And Master said, look here, you and God both are lying in the same bed. You are sleeping, awake outside. Why not sleep outside and awake inside? He is waiting for you. So religion, in fact, what it is, it's a way back to God. Therefore, nothing else. Pity it is that we have forgotten what our scripture says. As long as the practical people knew the ideal before them, and they also were competent to give them some demonstration of that, how to know oneself, to know God. For want of them, the same good old custom corrupted us, as I told you before. And ever since this paid preaching has started in all regions, have cutting that. Blind this, blind in both falls from the ditch. I am not quoting you from somewhere else, from the scriptures I am quoting. That are our scriptures. So we are fortunate in the 20th century that we have got scriptures. All masters who came the past so far. So there is hardly now a man to tell us how to rise up above the gods. In all religions you find, they preach outward things, customs, rituals, how to maintain, say prayer, this and that, this is our Lord. First step. If a man does not remain in any ism, then there will be corruption. So if man is a social being, he must remain in some social body. But to remain therein, we should rise above them and see what is the basic teaching of all religions. And basically, it's not all religions is said, but I am quoting you. So spirituality is another name of, I may say, is sociable yoga. What is sociable yoga, you know? It is just, spiritual life consists in peeling off layer by layer the various koshas or feet, physical, astral and causal, until it shines forth in its pristine splendor, self-luminosity, luminosity. God is light, all she is secured in full light. We see the full light is the Khalsa, is the true Hindu, is the true Mohammedan, is the true Christian. Then you know, I am so. I and my Father are one. Man has taken the same color of God. In Sanskrit they say, tattvam asi. You see? Brahm asmi. So, these are the things to be realized. O Nanak, what is say? He is the mouthpiece of God. Such like people, they become the mouthpiece of God. They speak as inspired by God. So, in all things, Guru Nanak says that do not utter any word except inspired by God. And God is I see man. So Mala Rum says, God has given orders to the prophet. He says that look here, I am so great that all this creation, universe is created by are not sufficient to contain me. High heavens, low heavens, I also. But strange enough, I contain myself in the heart of a saint. Did you want to see me go in there? Where I am manifest. So these are the things, you see, that are given to us by all masters before us. So Christ said, I and my Father are one. All the things are delivered to me of my Father. I am in the Father. And I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. The words I speak of unto you, I speak of not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me. He doeth the work. What more is that? All of the Master says the same thing. I am the mouthpiece of God. I and my Father are one. I simply speak as inspired by God. their conscious co-worker on the divine plan, they see that power is working. I am not. I am mere mouthpiece. So it is the fundamental law of God that no one can move Godward without the help of his Satguru, of the Master. This Guru Ram Das says. As Christ said, nobody can go to the Father except through me. So these are no new things given by one another. All Master says the same thing. Mala Rumi says, who are they such like masters? They are the godly souls clothed in human bodies and come with God's knowledge. They come from unknown places. What to do to take back souls back to God? Yes. What is like that? You know what Christ did say? I have come to separate daughter from the mother, to separate husband from the wife, sisters from the brothers. I have come not to make world happy, but I have come to take all these back home. When he was going down, Swami Master once went to, did not go to the hills, it was very hot season. And generally every year he wanted to go to the hill station. I was there and just asked him, well, this is very hot here. Would it not be better you go to the hills as usual? He said, it's passing, people think perhaps I go there to enjoy the cold over there. I simply go to men from all over India come over there. Those who are seeking, they may be led astray. So they come. Dinner Christ said, I've got many sheep to look after. They come to bring back all children of God to home. But so he remains ever with you whether you live or die, such a man. Him you die, he won't leave you. Christ said, I shall never leave you nor forsake you till the end of the world, isn't it? Even at the place of reckoning, he shall stand by thy side. So all your accounts are transferred from the Lord of Judgment to the Master who is God in man. So such a one, to have, it is a great blessing to have a living Master who will be with you in this earthly life and also won't leave you when you leave this man body. Even the young who can do so, only take the hem of such a one. So when you cross over the star, sun, moon, the luminous form of Master, manifested to taking charge of the soul and takes it on the higher things, you see, unless you are born in you, you cannot enter the kingdom. So this is what I meant when I say, you are on probation. You are led further by that God into spiritual written form of the world within you. So as long as spirit does not rise above the body consciousness, he remains stranger to the spiritual realm beyond. That's the first step. Where the world's last is end, there the religion starts. And that's in a way the same for all. Whether you wear one form, one level of one religion or the other, that makes no difference. So everything is within the body, nothing without it. He who seeks without wanders in delusion. Those who go to such a master, they always want to go within you. Our master, you see, well, why? Take somebody who goes within and takes you along with you. So it is a very definite way, inner way. One has been with all masters who came before. So all that we see is great optical illusion. We are identifying the body, you see body is changing, being of matter. Our world around us is changing at the same speed. as you are identified with it, we consider it all stationary. When everything changes, when you rise above it, you see the world in its right perspective. So that is why masters have all been advising like that. You must please know yourself, who you are, what you are. So this is the main subject, main, I mean, purpose of coming into the world. Unless we know ourselves, we cannot know. So God is world. You see, world of God when came into being, it is called world. World is the cause of all creation. God is nameless when it came into being, into expression, this is called Nam. So God, what is God? It is God is love, and God is divine, all divine. So master is world made flesh. When such masters come, they come with overflowing with the love of God and divinity of God. They come by radiation to all people at large. Those who sit in the field of action of the radiation, they are blessed. So they come, they bring the religion of love and no new religion. So all masters who have come, they gave up the same thing. Christ said, love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength. And love thy neighbor as thyself. This also, you see, Kabir said the same thing. Tenth Guru, while addressing to all communities, tell them, well, hear ye all, I tell you the truth, but those who love, they alone can know God. So by Saint Paul said, by love one, and by love serve one another. One who serves his fellow loves God truly, otherwise not. He says, I love God, and doesn't love the God into special power working in the world, then how can he say he loves God, whom he has not seen? So he prays best who loves best. You know, because love is one-pointed, single-pointed attention. With whom you love, just a single mind, nothing else interferes with that. When you are loving God, naturally all other thoughts, foreign thoughts don't affect you. A man who loves somebody, he is sitting maybe hundreds of people, but his whole attention is there, with whom he loves. So such a man while in the world is in the world, yet out of it, he's not of the world. So for that reason, God is love and love is God, and the way back to God is also through love. If God is us in every heart, we are all of the same essence as that of God, then if you want to meet God, what should you do? Should you torment those men? Whom you want, he also is right there. So love knows service and sacrifice. There are greater heinous crimes in the world, heinous sins, one greater than the other. Maharaj says, you may drink. Drinking is the mother of all evils. That's a very sick, great sin. And there's still more greater sin than that. You burn away all scriptures of the world. Of course, that's a very great sin. And still more, there's a greater sin than that. Burn all places of worship. And if with all these, there's still more greater than sin. Don't torment anybody. So love knows service and sacrifice. God is love. And naturally, when they come to give this religion of love, love knows service, and also if need be, to sacrifice ourselves for that. Tenth Guru says, those who want to play the game of love, they should lay their heads on their palms and come forward. Who can sacrifice themselves? They can only meet God. We sacrifice God for the sake of the world. One man went to him, sadhu. He prayed, "You are here great, you have renounced the world, you are outside the world," like that. He prayed him very much. And he said, "Look here, you are the great one who has sacrificed God for the world. And we have sacrificed only world for God. Who is the greater man who has renounced the world?" Naturally, you are. So masters say like that to his servant. If we love God, naturally what will happen? Whom we love, we never think of harming him. If he is hungry, you try to share with him. If he is naked, you would like to give him clothes. Even at the sacrifice of your own self. The more you love him, the more you can make sacrifice. And if you love God, can you not make sacrifice for those in which he resides? So truly speaking, those who say we love God and hate the people all around him, then he is a liar. There is a parable to go, to show in the scriptures or the Puranas of the Hindus. Masters speak sometimes through parables and sometimes straight talk. By parables is given to those who are not very great understanding, but to bring home that all these things they are given. Told the Lord which you invited, all gods and goddesses, as well as those anti-gods, for a banquet. Food was served, and they are made to sit, gods in their own rows, and the anti-gods in another row. And the food was served. Lord Vishnu stood up. "Look here, gentlemen, all this is food for you. Eat to your heart's content. But one condition is there, you should not bend your elbows to bring the food in your mouth." How can you bring food to your mouth? Anti-gods considered, but they said, "Lord Vishnu has played a mockery. He put you food and he doesn't allow us to eat." They left the scene disgusted. The gods were there, they considered that the words coming out of Lord Vishnu must be some meaning behind it, which you do not know. When considering calmly, they came to know why to bend, why to straight up. So they said, "All your facts to be at home." The purpose is, you see, if we want to make us happy, our own self, we must make others happy. Everybody wants to make others happy, naturally everybody is happy. If you won't allow anybody to die of hunger, you won't die of hunger. So love knows service and sacrifice. This is what it is. So best of all, you see, all these holy places of worship, they are putting some symbols of God in them to be worshipped. You see? These are symbols of God. Or in their churches, their temples, their other holy places of worship, they are often made out of model of man body. They put in two symbols of light and sound. God is light and God is music of the spheres, nada. Now those are the models. Whether it is a church or a temple or any other place, they are all equally created. They are models made out of man body. And which is the two body? Two temple of God, the man body itself. That was given to outside people for the beginners to know that such like sound and such like music of the spheres reverberating with you. When the master met, they gave them demonstration of that, how to rise above body consciousness and open the inner eye to see the light of God, and open the inner ear to hear the voice of God. So God sent man with seals on their eyes and ears. And they come back in the form of manifold and they go and break the eye. Seals on the eyes, they begin to see and then they begin to hear. So that's why Christ said, I have come to make those people see who do not see. And those who see, they may be blind. It is attention only. It's all right outside. So to be speaking, you see, one truth is work in all. Basic teaching of all. This is our narrow-mindedness for want of the truth, not knowing the truth, that all the differences have been made between man and Brahman, high class and low class. God made equal privilege to everybody. He did not make any higher law. Born the same way, same soul, or the same essence as that of God, and the same power of God we worship. So they, when they come to say, well, God, whether you call it maker cow, or he is merciful, or this and that, these are all go to express that God power which is controlling all creation, and we worship him. The man who is living in the true temple of God, which is the man body, he goes to the temples made after the model of man, put in symbols of light and from there. That is for the beginners. But those who already realize this truth within us, they have respect for other things for the beginners, but it, is not, it doesn't behove a man in whom that light is effulgent. You see that the God had tell them, well, look at this light is within you, you just wake up. So masters, those who are risen above this in body conscience, they see the truth and give it to the people at large. So man should, for that purpose, what is required? For that purpose, required ethical life. Life of self-restraint. True living. Our earning should be on it. And our food should be, I mean, pacifying giving. And also correct and good. So the word religion means apparently to link man with God. That's the ultimate of all yoga. And Guru Arjan gives out very clearly the highest of all religions is what? To be true, man of true living and know God. No difference what label he is carrying. That is why among the Hindu Sikhs, the temple, golden temple made, raised at Amritsar, the headquarters of all Sikhism. You know, foundation stone was laid out by whom? By the Mohammedan saint. When they arrived to that, where is the Hindu or Mohammedan question? The labels don't carry anything. So Guruji, what did he do? He collected as much things of the masters of the past as he could. About 60-70, and put it all in the six scriptures that we respect all, those in whom God manifested and they came to awaken the mankind. So what was the purpose? The whole object was to unite all mankind in the silken bond of love and not create schism. We're all one. No. Scriptures of particular masters you find in their own books. But six scriptures you find they contain about 60, more than 60 saints in that, who God knows. So they come to create love within us for God. They are overflowing with the love of God. You might have heard the Moses went to a wilderness, there was one shepherd. He was looking after the sheep over there. He was praying, God, oh God. Love knows no love like that. Oh God, had you been hungry, I would have given the milk of the sheep to you to drink. Had you felt cold, then I would have taken off the wool of the sheep and made of the cloth to give you to warm yourself. And he went on like that. Then Moses passed by that way, he said, oh heretic, what are you talking? Does God drink milk? And he would quite an echo. So why have disrespected God? Then he began to cry. Why cry you? Went within himself and God met him. Look here, I'll drink your milk also. I'll wear your clothes also. And then Moses went to the inner context. He said, oh Moses, you were sent to those, correct those people who are separated from me, not those who are already linked to you, separated. Go and ask for forgiveness. So such is the way, you see, Master comes to unite all this to within us. And then Guru says, when once this ignorance is dispelled, all distinctions between one religion or the other will drop. We are all children of God. We are having one name or other, that makes no difference. Yes, I was going to make it all. So my point is, so long as spirit does not rise above body consciousness, he remains stranger to the spiritual world beyond. The outer, there are two sides, you see, of the outer knowledge, one objective, the other is esoteric side. Objective height only meant for the preparation of the ground. The real thing is to know oneself, to rise above body consciousness, where the ABC starts. Such men, when they go around, they radiate love to all. And even the animals and the snakes don't harm them. So this is the teaching of the Master. This is what we call spirituality. A man be having one label the other, that makes no sense, you see. He's overflowing love for God and for humanity. Master come with divine nature, they give us an idea of beautiful vision of God. So such like masters have been coming from time to time in all countries. When they came, they awakened them to the truth of God. By parallel study of all the scriptures we see, they say the same thing. The basic teaching of all has been the same. For want of practical people, and assure me, ever since this paid preaching has started in all religions, ignorance has corrupted. So Master come, all right, you remain, you are not, they don't look to your labels that you are carrying. They say, oh man, oh soul, you are all equal in the sight of God, no high, no low, and rise to yourself to your own God who is within you. And man body is the golden opportunity that you want for that. So much of the time has already left. You were sitting here, I think, 20, 30, 40, 50, 67 years old. How far we have succeeded in this spirituality. So spirituality above all, you see. To be born in a temple is good. But while remaining in temples, you will understand the basic teaching is the one for all. Otherwise, if you stick to the watertight compartments of all, that will be what you say, narrow-mindedness. So Master come, they are free, they make you free. When you fly in the air, how blessed you feel, you see? All world outside mountains look like small mounds. High buildings look like little huts. So when you rise above God, you got the whole angle of vision is changed. So Master come to give us this in the world, you see, to make the best use of the man body we are in. So blessed you are joined some school of thought, that's good, that's the first step. That also demands us to have an ethical life, to be help of others. Among the Hindus, what they do, you see, they give, you see, when they say certain rituals, they share the something for the animals, something for the birds, something for the reptiles. This is their custom, you see. So blessed you are, you have got the man body, and it is high time to make the best use of that. Be spiritual. Remain any, you may have any label you like, That is meant only to make you spiritual, to know the spirit in you. You are spiritual, you are spirit in God.
Good evening and welcome to the satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the second half of the evening talk given by Master on 13th November 1972 at the Unitarian Church, San Francisco. Our reader this evening is Christine Clevenger. Hello, Christine.
Hi, Pradeep. Hello to everyone. Tonight, I'm continuing in the Wheel of Life, Chapter 4, and will also begin Chapter 5. No one is in more bondage than the one who wrongly thinks himself to be free. The trap of the highborn spirit is ambition. Those who are well-to-do, in the worldly sense of the word, appear to us in comfort. They may have sown some good seeds in the past and are apparently reaping a rich harvest in the present. Or they may now be acting upon the policy of snatch, grab, and hoard, and are thus building for themselves a hornet's nest for the future. All such people in affluence, unfortunately, forget that they in either case are wearing the unseen fetters of gold and are unknowingly heading for trouble. The common saying goes, the walls and mansions of the mighty are built with the sweat and tears of the poor. Unless one has sown good in the past, he cannot reap a rich harvest in the living present. He may also be carrying imperceptibly the burden of some guilt right under his sleeves. If he does not sow good seeds now, how can he expect to enjoy seemingly good fruits in the future, and for how long? Moreover, good deeds by themselves cannot absolve a person from the reaction of bad deeds, just as dirty water cannot and does not wash clean. With all our righteousness, we are but filthy rags, says a Christian saint. None is clean. No, not one. Man is always subject to the law of give and take, or compensation and retribution. Following the path of good works is decidedly something desirable and better than the path of evil deeds, but it is not all. A high ethical living may secure a paradise for a person for a lengthy sojourn, where he may comfortably enjoy heavenly bliss. But he is still interned therein in the astral or causal body, and he has not freed himself from the cycle of births and deaths. So long as one feels that he is the doer, he cannot escape from the wheel of births and has to bear the fruit of seeds. It is the contact with the Holy Ghost, sacred nam or word, that alone helps a person in his upward ascent to higher spiritual regions, far removed from the shadows of repeated births and deaths that ceaselessly move up and down in endless gyres with no way of escape therefrom. Hell and heaven are the regions where the disincarnate spirits have to remain for a relatively long period according to their actions on earth, bad or good, as the case may be. The stay here, however long, is not everlasting, and it does not take them out of the inexorable cycle of births and deaths. Paradise, heaven or Eden, is the El Dorado of certain faiths. It is also termed salvation by many. But the fact of the matter is that after enjoying paradisiacal bounties for as long as is determined by good deeds, one is given a human body once again, for it alone provides an opportunity to gain merit, leading ultimately to liberation. Even the ministering angels of God aspire to human birth when they feel that they have done their job. Thus, in following the almost universally acknowledged, widely believed, and generally accepted path of good deeds, one ultimately finds himself once more caught in the web of insatiable desires and ambitions, and with this glittering and ever elusive firefly in front of him, he still remains an unwitting captive in the iron grip of karmas. To achieve his objective, he performs tapas, or various kinds of ascetic austerities, which may bring him better lives. Even when he attains the sovereignty of a kingdom, his mind runs riot. He gives himself free reins and commits mighty deeds of valor and prowess, most of which are evil enough to earn him hell. Again, after taking a bitter lesson from the hell fires in which he is plunged, he tries to seek solace in tapas. Thus he is ever caught and moves entangled in the vicious circle of temptations and lures from hell to contrition, and from contrition to sovereignty, and from sovereignty to hell again, one after the other, in an endless cyclic order, up and down the wheel of life. Thus, everyone for himself makes his own heaven and hell, and remains through his own volitional deeds entangled in the gossamer web of life prepared by him. These regions of hell and paradise do not come in the way of one who follows the path of the saints. The middle course, right between the two eyebrows, for he bypasses the path of a karma yogi. Even if a soul under the protection of a master saint may, for a while, go astray, it is sure to be rescued. Though saints are living models of humility and do not speak of the great authority that is theirs, yet at times, they do indirectly refer to the saving power of saints gone before them. The scriptures reveal that Sant Sat Guru Nanak rescued one of his disciples who somehow wandered astray hellward. The Holy One had to visit hell for a lost sheep and dip his thumb in the molten fires of hell, thereby cooling down the entire hell furnace, giving relief not only to one, but to many sinner souls howling piteously in great distress. Similar instances occurred in the time of Raja Janak and others as well. Once Hazur, my master too, had to pull out one of his disciples who was straying downwards. How then can there be redemption from hell for the common man? Those who are devoted to the practice of the holy word, all their labors end. Their faces, O Nanak, shine with glory, and many souls are saved along with them. Another region, named Erath or Purgatory by the Muslim saints, exists and has both joys and terrors in varying degrees. Experiences of various kinds of fears and agonies of hell have been described by various masters of different grades. This subject is not an imaginary mapped out scheme, but a serious one for reflection. Whether one believes it or not, the disciple of a saint is not concerned with any of them. And so long as one is true to his master saint, the Sant Guru, no power on earth can injure a single hair of his head. A true disciple of a Sant Guru verily says, I have my dealings with the saints, and my only concern is with them. With the stock in trade provided by the saints, I am freed from all hallucinations. The angel of death cannot now touch a single hair of my head when the entire record of my deeds has been consigned to the flames. Again, it is said, invincible indeed is the angel of death, and none can subdue him. But he is powerless in the presence of the sound current of the Master. The very sound of his word strikes him with terror, and he flees therefrom. For he fears lest the Lord of hosts may strike him dead. And now, chapter 5, no one can be said to have been born for himself alone, for none can be an island unto himself. To serve the needy, sick, and starving is also a sideline, more effective than mere preaching. Service before self stirs and kindles the embers of sympathy, kindness, and love. These virtues have a great purifying effect and clean a person of all his dross and entitle him to the highest knowledge of divinity. Pleasure tastes well after service is a well-known adage. Ahimsa or non-injury refers to man's abstaining not merely from killing, violence, and injury, but includes also evil thought and ill word. While it may not be so with brutes and beasts, ahimsa infuses strength in man, which not only excels many virtues, but is the highest virtue above all others. Service done to sincere seekers of the divine path is of far greater value than any other service. Helpful ways include inter alia, distribution of alms to the really indigent and the needy, giving sweets to those engaged in extraordinarily arduous pursuits in inaccessible places, nursing the sick, and helping the afflicted ones. All these qualities are great aids in the path and should be encouraged and cultivated by assiduous practice by all means possible. One should not, however, rest content with them alone, but one must push ahead with the help of these purificatory processes on the way to freedom as enjoined by the Master. Love is the panacea for most of the ills of the world. It is the core of all other virtues. Where there is love, there is peace. Love and all the blessings shall be added unto thee is the central idea of the teachings of Christ. The entire edifice of Christianity is founded on the twin principles of love thy God with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and with all thy might, and love thy neighbor as thyself. God is love, and so is the human soul, being a spark from the same essence. St. John says, he that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love, and he who loveth God loveth his brothers also. Guru Gobind Singh likewise laid emphasis on the prime need of love. He said, Verily I say unto thee that God reveals himself only to those who love. A Muslim saint says, God created man an embodiment of love. For his glorification, his angels were quite enough. To crown all these virtues comes truth and good living. One should, in the first instance, be true to oneself. The trouble with most of us is that our mind, tongue, and actions do not move in unison. We have one thing in the mind, another on our tongue, and still another on our hands. To thine own self be true, and it must follow as night the day. Thou canst not then be false to any man, said Shakespeare. You are in the body. God, the controlling power, is also in the body. If you are true to your own self, you have to fear none. Before you attempt to deceive anyone, you first deceive your own self. Rama cannot cheat Rama were the words of Swami Ramcharath when someone tried to warn him of the deceptive ways of the world. Truth is the greatest of all virtues, but true living is greater still. We must try to lead a neat and clean life in the temple of the Holy Ghost and not defile it by falsehood and lust of the flesh, thus turning it into a money changer's den of the devil. It is commonly believed that prosperity is the source of peace, but it deceives the fools like a will-o'-the-wisp and endangers the rich. It lets go the bridle from off the mind. When once the mind gets off the right track, it recklessly contracts sins which entail dire consequences. To absorb the self wholeheartedly in the soil of worldly uncleanliness in mind, word, or deed is a heinous sin, and death is the reward thereof. The paths leading to worldly enrichment and to God lie far apart. One can take either of the two as one may like. The mind is a single entity linking the body with the soul at one end, and the body with the world and worldly riches at the other. Thus one has of necessity to choose between the two alternatives. Once the die is cast, one has perforce to apply oneself steadily to reach the goal, whatever it be. Riches per se are no obstacle in the way of spirituality, for it is the common heritage of all, the rich and the poor alike, and neither of them can claim it as a special gift for himself. All that is required for success on the path is genuine desire, honesty of purpose, a pure living, and a steadfast devotion to the cause. A rich man has, of course, to see that he does not use unfair means in amassing his wealth, and that he uses his honestly acquired treasures in fruitful pursuits and not on wasteful and ephemeral gains. He should always look upon his riches as a sacred trust from God, wherewith to help the needy and the poor, the hungry and the thirsty, the sick and the ailing, for all such people have a claim on him as human beings and children of the same Father. This was the advice given by the sage Ashtavakra to Raja Janak when, after granting him a practical experience in the science of soul, he returned to him his kingdom, which the king had dedicated to his master preceptor before initiation into the sacred path of practical spiritual experience. He was advised to consider it as a gift from him, the Rishi or God-man, and to use it for ameliorating the condition of his people and his country, which were consigned to his care by God. Unless the riches secured by fair means are utilized wisely and well, one is likely to go astray and become egocentric and a slave to ill-gotten health or wealth, and is unknowingly caught in the golden chains that keep him in bondage. To warn against this, Christ in no uncertain terms declared that it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. P.S. Eliot, a Nobel Prize winner, says, "Take no thought of the harvest, but only of proper sowing." The sowing, then, is of prime importance, for quality of the harvest depends on the quality of the seed sown. Next comes the proper tending, the humanizing process, which usually takes quite a long time, covering a few incarnations depending on the past makeup of each individual. But with the right type of steadfast devotion and the grace of the Master Power, one can easily traverse the otherwise hard and torturous path. A perfect master, conversant with the turns and twists of the road, says Kabir, can, however, take the disciple through in no time. The pilgrim soul with a competent guide and honest endeavor can easily swim over the ocean of the world, even in the midst of worldly life. Those who do not daily engage in bhajan and simran are always in trouble. They float endlessly on the stream of lustful pleasures. Practice of vairagya does help one in the process of self-purification, and gradually a disciple is enabled to cut the upas tree of multitudinous desires, first by cutting the branches and then striking at the root. No one is faultless. Man is the child of error, and error is always discreet. Though to fall in sin is human, yet to persist in it is villainous. It is not profitable to stock bad merchandise. It is good to be born in a temple, but to die in it is a sin, for we have gradually to rise above all forms and formalities of the kindergarten class, which all social religions provide, and to grow into the sunshine of spirituality. We must study the path if we wish to define the future and awaken in the reality beyond. One who takes no thought of the future will soon have to rue the present. The sins and sorrows are our constant companions and go cheek by jowl. The small foibles gradually let in greater ones, while those confessed are half redressed. True repentance, followed by good actions, goes a long way in assuaging suffering. Man would do little for God if the devil were dead. A man living under the shadow of an impending calamity lives at his best, for he strives the hardest. To find faults in others is quite easy, but to reform oneself is the most difficult, for we see not the beam in our own eyes. Fear of God is the beginning of wisdom, and a danger foreseen is half avoided. One who is forewarned is forearmed. Persons who are bound to the physical plane must obey the commandments of some freed master saint if they want to free themselves from the delusion of mind and matter. Cast off the burden of your entire responsibilities at the feet of your spiritual master, and the deadly grip of sins will gradually but surely loosen its hold on you. Leave all else and follow me, was the exhortation of Lord Krishna. Come unto me, all ye that labor, and I shall give you peace, said Christ. The devoted disciple actually feels that even the chamber of sickness is a temple of devotion for him. A master who is himself well-versed in the practice of the Holy Word and is competent to initiate others into it is the real master and a perfect guide, the Murshid e Kamil. He would, like an able and efficient administrator, wind up all deeds and square the account, and Jesus-like advise, sin no more. Similarly, Hazur Sawan Singh Ji would, when a disciple in open congregation confessed a lapse on his part and craved indulgence, gently raise his right hand and say, thus far and no further. Should we then do nothing? How can that be? The reply is simple. So long as the mind rules, a person cannot but act, and must act, though he may restrain himself in his acts, according to the behest of his master, and side by side cultivate the highest virtues. By doing nothing, man gradually learns to do ill, and Pandora-like unlocks the evils lying buried in him. If one wishes to lie upon roses, he must strive to cultivate and grow roses for himself. But we always act haphazardly and for selfish ends. We do not know what we should do and what we should abstain from. The master saint is the divine imperator of his time. By love, guidance, instruction, and example, he leads men to acts of devotion and reverence and love for the divine links of Nam, Word, the inner voice of God, Kalma, or Kalm-i-Kadim, Akashbani, or Bang-i-Asmani, which he makes manifest in them. A master cannot be respected by reason of his mansion, but his mansion because of him. So the Holy One is the most respectable, lovable, and worthy of all reverence. He gives the divine contact and an experience of forgetting for the moment our physical self. Then we have visible glimpses of the divine links within us, and by degrees gain more and more of the mystic experience. In his satsangs or spiritual discourses, many past sins are given a quick shrift. In his company, maybe in thought, in correspondence, or in meditation, much benefit is derived so far as the karmas and the sinful associations are concerned. Though there is no end to man's sins, yet at the same time, there is no end to the immeasurable mercy in the vast treasure house of God. In the journey of life, in whatever place, sect, country, or society one may find himself, one's chief bag and baggage consists of Nam, the Holy Word. A contact with the living lifelines within, the light of God and the voice of God. The various names of God that we usually know and frequently repeat are mere words of our own mintage for the nameless reality, which is one indivisible whole, indescribable and ineffable. And there I will stop and continue this at my next reading. I read from the Wheel of Life, chapter 4, and began chapter 5. Thank you, gracious Master.
Thank you, Christine, for reading for us. There were 55 people in attendance for this evening's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So this is the high time. Man body is the golden opportunity that we have got. Why? Because in this man body only we can know God and in no other body.